Hello and welcome back to another New Era episode of the Sports Pro Podcast. I'm Katie and I'm Project Manager here at Sports Pro. I'm thrilled to be joined today by Yinku and Tatila Blake, who work with me here in our operations and production team. Now, this is a debut for you both, so would you mind very quickly introducing yourselves and giving us an overview of your day-to-day at Sports Pro, as well as perhaps your background in and within sports? So Yin, maybe we start with you.
I'm Yin. I'm the production director here at Sports Pro, also an SLT member. I lead a fantastic team who are responsible for the production of all of our B2B events, anything from logistics, budgets, venue negotiations, the look and feel of an event. Basically, your experience at a Sports Pro event will be a remit of myself and my team. I am Australian, grew up with sports. Sport was part of everyday life. Played it in school, very much volleyball was my thing. Watched rugby league, rugby union, Parramatta Eels, definitely strong at heart for myself. And also, you know, it was at a time, not showing age, but all of it was quite accessible, free to air. So definitely sat down with the family. Test cricket was on the weekends. The F1 was on the weekends. Like everything was there. So in terms of sport, lived and breathed it, still follow it through here. And from currently at the moment, bit of an F45er. So, you know, I am in that cult, if you want to say, but yeah, quite enjoy it.
Yin is also training for High Rocks, by the way.
Absolutely.
Which is insane. Tatila.
Yes, well, I am Tatila. I'm event manager here at Sports Pro, and I work very closely with Yin in terms of all of the delivery of the events, whether that be from venue finding, site visits, looking into negotiations with those venues, because we all have a little budget here and there, and then working with the other team as well in terms of our internal teams that head to the events, volunteers, external suppliers, everything like Yin mentioned that puts the event in a deliverable state when it comes to on-site. We're the ones that kind of put that into action with help from our lovely production team and operations team, really. In terms of sport, I literally love sport. I've grown up with sport. It's been a part of my life forever. I worked mainly in sports as well from a very young age, volunteering, work experience. And my remit is more of the track and field. So I used to do track and field from a very young age in terms of the sprinting side of things. And then later took it upon myself that it wasn't as sociable as I needed it to be going into sort of full-time work and starting a career path. So I've taken on the remit of sort of marathons, which is crazy. So yeah, two of those upcoming this year. And yeah, that's me.
Yeah, again, a very normal thing to do, High Rocks and marathon running. Definitely can't relate to either of those.
You're joining me, right? Later on this year,
I think, yeah.
So today we are diving into the concept of allyship within the sports industry, a concept that is often spoken about, but less often seen put into practice. So for the first half of this episode, I'll be discussing with Tatila and Yin what allyship truly looks like and how to engage everyone in the conversation. Then in part two, Eleanor Kuifa will be speaking to Santo Ragiri, founder of the Fair Play Project, an initiative urging men and boys to become part of the solution to the problem of gender inequality in sport. Now, I'm very aware that we are three women discussing this topic and that often this sort of topic is spoken about in the context of male allyship. But this also makes me think about how the three of us are not particularly well-known, not particularly high-profile voices within the sports industry. And that's often what's required to grab attention and make people think, clearly, this person is talking about this topic, it's worth listening to. So I want to start by asking you both what your thoughts are on those in the industry who hold these more influential positions and their ability to really propel change on this subject. And I know in these sort of conversations, like I said, we hone in on male allyship, but I want to open that up as well to female leaders that we see as well. So Tatila, maybe start with you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, I know that my remit is solely around track and field and athletics from that side of things. And I think one person that definitely has come through in the last 2 years, I'm talking sort of from 2019, she was sort of allocated her role as vice president, and that's Hermena Respero. So she's vice president for World Athletics. She was kind of brought into World Athletics to sort of grow the representation of female leaders within World Athletics and try and boost their council. I think it was around 40% that she wanted to kind of build that council, and she's already smashed it. She had a four-year goal, which was set for 2027, and there's now 13 women in the council out of sort of 26, and that's already done. And off the back end of that, that's proven to show her success when getting promoted to senior vice president. And so the next target now is to try and get more female leaders on that chair. They wanted to have 50% women on the vice president chair board. And I think there's just one at the moment. So, I mean, it's great for the world of athletics, and it's definitely something that is to be celebrated. But yeah, there's still definitely a lot more to do. And I think growing up in athletics, you definitely see it being a very solo sport. So having those female leaders that are sort of there tackling those equity challenges is sort of fantastic and a little bit of a way to go. But yeah, she's done a fantastic job. So it's definitely one for me.
Yeah, for sure. Similar, actually. I remember seeing last year for International Women's Day, Dave Haggerty, he's the ITF's president. He sort of renewed his appeal, I guess, for male leaders and influencers in tennis to advocate for women in more senior roles across leadership, coaching, officiating, things like that. And it's part of their wider Advantage All strategy, but more specifically their Men as Allies program. And essentially it's a program asking men to pledge their support to make organizational and or personal commitments that contribute to these sort of goals, like providing more equal opportunities for women and girls, both on and off the court. So similar there. But Ian, I know you had a more sort of athlete-related one that you want to talk about.
Obviously, you know, there are lots of influential people in the industry who really do and really should use their power and reach in order to get the message out there. Leading by example, super important. You know, change is difficult, right? Nobody likes it. It's always a too hard basket, or maybe it's like slowly we'll think about it. So for me, it was more about actually who's putting the message and who's putting the conversation out there. And Naomi Osaka, 2021 French Open, you know, her decision not to be at the press conference because for her, mental health was a big thing. Something that, you know, it's world stage, big grand slam, like to defy, you know, your commitments and what you're meant to be doing and look out for yourself. Because actually, if you don't prepare yourself enough, then you're not going to be good to anybody else. And so that sort of resonated because it was, you know, yes, we can talk about leaders and what everybody's doing at the moment, but taking a slightly different angle, looking at actually, if I don't start with myself, then how can I bring better to the entire industry? So that was super important to me. And I know it's slightly off tangent slightly in terms of, you know, the actual question itself, but starting at home is definitely something that sits stronger with me.
Yeah, for sure. Slightly similar is, for me, Steph Curry, NBA player. He's such, obviously, an influential figure across the world. Everyone knows who he is. He's also a massive fan of the WNBA, routinely attends WNBA games, interacts with all the players, both in person and off the court in social media. And I believe he attends quite a few of his god sister's Stanford College games and takes his daughter with him. So it's like someone of this status and influence makes people wonder why they're taking the interest in the women's game and why they're going and things like that. And I think that side of things as well is so important, I guess, as well. Now, moving on slightly, for some people, they may not see that there is a problem in this space due to how they've been brought up and the circles they've run in previously. But for these people in particular, I guess it's realizing that there is a problem, and it's not just being non-sexist, but it's actually being anti-sexist. I'd really like to hear both of your thoughts on how we as women and anyone listening who is an ally or wanting to be an ally can plant those seeds and make people realise when there is a sexist comment or a sexist action. So Yin, maybe start with you. What do you think about that?
I mean, you've also started by saying that, you know, people don't realise. I was one of those people. I was brought up, you know, in Australia, it was very much like if you worked hard, you play hard, you would reap the rewards. And never did I ever think it was because I was female or because I was a woman of color or, you know, it was some other minority group. And as you're sort of saying that, it is super important that everybody realizes not everybody starts at the same base. So the experiences that Jutila, you would have had, you know, growing up, Katie, how you sort of grew up and the people you're around all dictate how we react in our everyday lives, especially sort of in the workplace. So being more open to that and understanding what the issues are now in the industry, allyship's super important. And actually having people who support you calling out if they see something that's not quite right. More often than not, we were very much like, oh, you'd sort of like see it happen and then you'd walk away from the situation and then comment on it. That doesn't help anyone, because actually it's a learning moment. It's a teaching moment for everyone. Like I say, I wasn't aware of the actual implications, you know, in terms of being female and being in the workplace. Equally, you could say that some people just aren't aware that they're doing it. And if nobody's ever brought it up to them before, why would they think any differently? So educating everyone's super important. Supporting as well, you know, support your fellow colleagues, support women. You know, we need to be there to help bring the industry up. And if we're constantly fighting against each other, it's not going to be for the better. So those two elements, I think, for me, are like, actually just make a stand. If you see something that's wrong, call it out.
Yeah, for sure. Tatila, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I feel like similar to obviously Ian's comments there, it's definitely the communication and actually educating people on it is probably up there for key as well. But there's so many fantastic initiatives out there at the moment that surround these topics that we're obviously challenging and trying to fight for. And it's about sharing those as well, sharing them in an open space. Because a lot of people sometimes, like I know Ian mentioned in terms of the communication and getting out there, it's difficult for people to do if they don't feel like it's a subject that they know a lot on, but they do want to share information with others. Most workplaces, if not, definitely consider sort of raising it, might have these sort of initiatives on board on how they can help or be a part of that. Go and find events, like go and educate, share events in open, like we use, for example, Teams. There's no harm in sharing these articles or sharing these initiatives between teams, because then it's done in a broader aspect where you're not really targeting anyone, or you can raise them in a way that you go to your sort of head of people and be like, I think this is something that we could raise or do something external on as a company. And I think that's just other ways as well within the workplace of sharing that information, because it can be sort of quite daunting, especially if you're new to it, but you do want to know more.
Yeah, for sure. So I actually did some research coming into this as a research fanatic that I am and came across the Tucker Centre for Research, who make a lot of really great suggestions, some of which we've already touched upon. Very quickly run through them. Basically, being vocal, speak up if you see the inequity, celebrate female leaders and athletes, and create that culture like you just spoke about, Tatila. Next one, educating yourself. So again, already spoken about that. Learn about the barriers that girls and women face in sport, in the industry. Review the questions and policies and practices that are in place at your company. And reflect and address on your own personal bias, both conscious and subconscious, which I think we've also touched upon. And then finally, it was about promoting female leadership. So mentoring, sponsoring, championing, hiring women, inviting women to apply and to communicate opportunities to each other, and using... again, back to the sort of influential topic that we just spoke about, using your power to advocate for these women. So I think just on that first point in particular, it's worth mentioning, and maybe you guys have a view on this as well, about how so many female athletes lack the sponsorship and funding. Again, I can't go podcast without mentioning netball, but Leila Guscoff, for example, she's a doctor, but she also represents the England international team. And I think this is only one example of so many. I mean, we see a lot of the England Roses rugby players, the women team as well, who have to have a full-time job. And it's so different because for the men, their full-time job is training and going to play rugby every day. It's so frustrating almost when viewers who are watching these matches say, oh, but the men's game is so much more exciting. And it's like, yeah, of course, it probably is, because they're doing it every day and they're training and playing every day.
Someone who I've always looked up to in terms of the athletics world is Alison Felix. So she ran the USA, multiple world championships, multiple medals. It's sort of uncanny how many, she's quite ridiculous. She was always sponsored by Nike. Eventually it kind of got to that point where she fell pregnant and she actually lost like her sponsorship, or they were only going to pay her 70% of that because she was pregnant. So she then challenged for other women who are in elite sport or in that sport, or even just being pregnant on the maternity program. And eventually Nike, they did release a statement where they would obviously not have that gap between their athletes who they sponsor in terms of their pay. And it's crazy to think that that was even a thing until so recently, per se. I think her daughter's only two.
Yeah. And it's back to that point of like just checking and challenging your policies, right, that you have at the company.
Yeah.
Perfect. Very slight change of tune. And we spoke about this before on the pod, but I think given your roles at SportsPro, I think it's definitely worth talking about is events. So we don't see many women coming to our events, for example, and it's really getting people thinking, why not? What's the barrier? Who's not advocating for these women to come? Who's not empowering these women to come to our events? And I'm aware that this comes from another direction too, in that women have shared directly with us that they're not comfortable coming to these events. As our resident production director and event manager, I'd love to hear from your point of view what event organisers can do and what attendees can do to create more inclusive and supportive space.
A lot of it's legacy, isn't it? It's also, you know, we're still a heavily male-dominant industry. So just by sheer numbers, you know, that is always going to be an issue. Removing barriers where possible, you know, a lot of the time, if, you know, an event comes up, the first thing that you'll look at is like, okay, as, you know, if there's sales in there, majority of salespeople are going to be men as well. So it is very much a, how do we focus on the females that are in the industry? How do we get them there? You know, we've done things like the New Era Open Day. We've, you know, removed that barrier to entry. There's no fee to come to that event. A lot of the time it's like getting, you know, approval, getting budget to be able to go to these events where companies may not see that you are the best fit to come along. They're not looking at the bigger picture. They're looking at the initial, for this specific event, what is the ROI? What can you get back from it? Okay, you know, that's where we go. These are the people that are going to go. So they're not thinking about the bigger picture of like, actually as an industry as a whole, there is a much bigger element at play here. Bringing the topic to the table. So actually addressing it, which, you know, we have done in our events and we're continuing to do, you know, putting your money where your mouth is basically, you know, being able to show that, you know, we've got to start with us. Curating the agenda, you know, looking at it in a way that actually allows women to come into the space and not feel like it's quite a daunting experience. No matter how confident you are and no matter how senior you are, we've had conversations where most people do experience imposter syndrome. If you walk into a room full of men who potentially have already met each other before, networking, chatting away, how do you enter a conversation? How do you come in and say, hey, my name's Yin Ku, I'm the production director at Sports Pro. How are you guys going? How does that actually work? And how can we make that easier for women in the industry to be able to facilitate the conversation? So I think having, you know, specific focus workshops or networking sessions that help engage that and start it off. We've also implemented, you know, the meet and greets for the New Era community. So at least you've got friendly faces at the beginning of an event. So therefore, throughout the event, you can at least go up to them, hey, how are you going? Because even just that from a very beginning piece, just knowing somebody else gives you the confidence to be able to be like, okay, I'm looking for somebody. You don't need to be stuck on your phone. You know, networking is not something that comes naturally to a lot of people. So being able to be there and give comfort to the women in the industry obviously makes a big difference. But yeah, there is plenty that we can do. And it doesn't even stop at just like, you know, the structure of the event itself. It's down to the design, the event design of the space, the actual venue you choose, the colors, the lighting, furniture. So playing on all those emotions, not just talking at somebody going, this is what we're going to do, this is how we're doing it. It's the entire concept. So playing a part with all those senses adds to sort of being in a much more comfortable environment.
Just coming back very quickly to your first point around how you're saying we get a lot of commercial and salespeople at our events, but that's not necessarily what our events are for. So I think that's also for people who are selling just industry events in general to think about. You can send marketing people, and that marketing is often like quite a female dominated area. So it's thinking from that angle as well, I guess. But Jasiya, do you have anything to add to that?
I mean, well, she's wiped the floor, isn't she, really? I mean, but no, just to touch on that, I think what we say, obviously, like bringing different departments to these events as well. Like I was recently at a forum, which was mainly sort of venues and basically the logistics side of planning from that early stage and meeting and greeting people there. And you walked into this space and you looked everywhere and it was just female. It was just females everywhere who are all event managers, all event execs who are in that space. And they're the ones that are building and starting those events. I think there's probably about three males in the whole event. So it was really interesting to see. But yeah, just moving back mainly onto the topic there. And I think what Yin touched upon in terms of like the agenda inclusion is massive as well, because how we see our agenda, I think me and Yin are definitely hot on it, always checking and challenging sort of our teams as well in terms of, okay, so how many females have we got speaking? How many males have we got speaking? What's the ratio here? Because you'll go to a lot and you see a lot of events where it's very male dominated. So how can we change that? And I think the agenda inclusion and how certain topics can be raised is also a huge thing. So I think for event organisers, it's taking and looking at those equity challenges that are being faced and thinking, okay, so how could we potentially input that into our agenda where it's a natural fit? Because I feel like a lot of our events cover a lot of areas where we will have equity challenges within that. So it's also a case of sort of doing a little bit of research, maybe trying to find a different event or a different initiative or groups where you can speak on this, because there's a lot of groups for women that touch upon these topics, but I feel like they're just not as known. And I mean, we obviously are doing a great job of that with sort of New Era and bringing different female leaders to the platform and just everybody to come together as one and sort of check and challenge and discuss and promote. But touching upon everything Yin said, I think, yeah, a lot of it is just the communication and getting out there as well.
That is a really lovely segue into something that I wanted to bring up, actually. Very topical with International Women's Day. I, for one, would turn my nose up a little bit if I got asked to speak on an International Women's Day panel and quite indirectly got told that I was only relevant for a day. So I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts from your experience and things you've seen. Do you have any ideas on how we can keep these incredible women who are being asked to speak around this time of year, how we can keep them relevant and present beyond just a single day, essentially?
It's funny that you say that, actually, because I was thinking in the back of my head, but we must not be a checkbox, yeah. which is exactly the topic you come up on. It's hard, right? Because part of it is a checkbox exercise, but we have to make it so much more than that. Nobody wants to be a token. You want to be there on your own merit. One key thing is to be open at the very beginning of your process as to who you want to attract and who you want to be targeting to speak at our events. I'm going to talk on SportsPro's behalf here. And having that from the get-go, so you set the standard, you set your KPIs, you know this is what we want, and you're picking people because they are the right people who happen to be female. Fantastic. But you're picking them because of what they have brought to the industry, and you're then giving them the chance to have that conversation. And I remember Alex Willis back in the day at I think it was the Brand Conference. This was years ago when the Brand Conference existed, actually. And, you know, saw her there, and to see where she is now, like making such change is fantastic. But to be back there when it was like she was representing Wimbledon and it was just like a starting point, I think it's a bit of two ways as well. It's got to be on the person to be like, I want to get the voice out there and I want to be that person to speak, but also having the media outlets to be able to do that. So as companies, we have to be open to be able to think about that as more than just, you know, just that exercise of tick, we've hit our quota, because it should never be about that. And if it's just purely for quotas, we're doing it for the wrong reason.
100% to see that.
I think it's always about the touch points as well that you have throughout the year. I feel like it's so easy for every single company or brand to look at these dates in the calendar and think, right, what are we going to do for that? And that's where a lot of people will shy off, like you said, and be like, I'm not going to speak on that then just because you've asked me to, because it's that time of year. There needs to be those touch points throughout the year to show that it's an active thing that we're trying to tackle here. It's not just a day, it's forever. So you have to keep pushing on these. And I will loop back around again to sort of the New Era Connect sessions that we do, that we have every couple of months. These sort of initiatives where we're getting women in a safe space to talk and touch upon. We do this so regularly that we're like a family, you know, we're a family. And by the time it comes to these really key dates that people see and want to sort of shine on, like we've already got that family that have the same care and passion. And we're reaching out to you because we know that we're on the same path here. We're not just picking you because of your title or who you are or what initiative you've brought onto the stage. We do care about that, but it's not at the focus of our minds. It's bringing everybody up and getting everybody knowledgeable in that space as well.
Yeah, definitely. I've actually spoken to the founder and the curator of the Collective Visibility, Vanessa, a few times. And if you've not heard of it, essentially what she's doing is very organically and continuously expanding a movement to diversify speakers and thought leadership in sport. So she's created a list of, I think it's over like 1300 women at this point, who all work in the sports industry, who are all thought leaders, like over 100 countries that are represented, and it's publicly available for everyone. It's just a huge list of names and where they're from. I'm sure it's a very admin heavy task, but it also seems like such a simple concept. Like it's always on. She's just doing a phenomenal job. So for anyone listening that needs any female speakers, please go and take a look at that for sure. But Yin, given your seniority here at SportsPro and moving to the realm of visibility, I'd like to very quickly touch on the impact of seeing more female leaders and how this has influenced you?
Number one, given me confidence, for starters, to seeing more females around. It's also opened my knowledge up to, you know, the issues that do affect women. When I first started at Sports Pro, I was the second female here. Also, having just come over, being an Aussie, sort of fit into that mold quite easily, gave as good as I got sort of thing. But being able to see a lot more females now, it just makes me proud of how far we have come, how far we still have to go. But the fact that the males in the industry are actually listening as well, and they're changing their mindset. It's not just, that's how we do it, that's how it's done, we're going to keep it this way. So being able to see more females gives the opportunity to others as well to be like, hey, I can actually do that. So, you know, I can be SLT, I can be a founder, I can be a CEO, because actually there are plenty of women who have done it and shown that they can be ballsy when they need to be, but still not let their gender define who they are.
Jasila, do you have anything to add as, again, quite a senior member of the Sports Pro team?
Yeah, well, I feel like I've definitely learned a hell of a lot, let's just say, just from being at Sports Pro sort of this year and a half already. I'm very lucky and grateful that I have Yin as sort of my manager, because she's incredible in terms of what she can achieve. And I'm always saying to her, okay, well, how would you approach this? How would you approach it? Almost like she's kind of like a mentor in that sense as well, in like a new career path that was for me. But I think it's the exact same thing here. Like, I've been exposed just from being at the events and being able to go to these spaces where we have got a fantastic sort of female panel or female presence, or networking with, well, I can say hundreds sort of at last year's New Era Breakfast as well. Like, have met so many of these names online and speaking to them, thinking, wow, that's so cool that she's gone from this and she's now doing this. And it's like, you've actually got that open conversation to have with them. And it's sort of changed my view, because I was one of those ones that just never really noticed sort of the challenges growing up, because the space that I was around was very female heavy, being in sort of like the area of, say, expertise that I was in from my previous work. And yeah, I've just been exposed to some incredible females and conversations that have really made it an eye-opening experience. And I know that, like Yin said, there's still a long way to go with that, but the more that we're doing and the fantastic names that we've even been bringing on board thanks to our sort of incredible content team, we're only growing because it's at the front of our minds and it's something that we've really started to challenge, and it's definitely shown, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose this leads me very nicely, actually, almost full circle back to the representation piece. So past over 100 years, men have held the power in sport, from like governments to deciding who gets media coverage to sponsoring and like bringing money to the table, essentially. As we and so many other women have discovered in the battles for equality throughout the decades, we can be hugely effective ourselves, as we've just touched on, in creating this change. But having men backing us up and making that path a little easier will ultimately have the biggest impact, right? So I guess I want to ask one final question. And it's around recognising the sensitivity that some men may feel towards these sort of discussions. So what advice would you give them to engage constructively and kind of just get involved, I guess?
I think it's what you want to do as well, in terms of how, what energy are you going to put into this to make sure that it's well known and it's communicated well. And I must say that there was a great initiative that took place last year, and it was the Game Plan Initiative by Adidas. And what they did an ally run, which was basically a run that took place for the whole of the Adidas HQ, with both male and female would get involved, and it would be an evening run, because the topic around women feeling uncomfortable or dangerous running in the dark, it was something that first spun sort of with their HQ. They thought, you know what, we need to do something about this. And it was raised by one person, and it ended up being circled around to the whole HQ, and it was like a 5K run or something. But they went out in the evening and they sort of tackled that, and they asked everybody on the run some questions that they might have felt uncomfortable asking or not too sure on. And it basically created that safe space for them around colleagues that were doing the exact same thing, both male and female. And they were able to have their questions answered by the women in their company, which I thought was a fantastic initiative. But then I think when you're not in that space, or you don't feel comfortable in that space as a male, I think it's also just do the questions that you feel comfortable with those closest to you. I feel like there are a lot of men who may have a lot of women in their family or friends as well, where they feel like it could be a little bit more open. Just ask. I mean, there is no harm in asking, because you're going to get an answer from someone. You asking isn't wrong.
I think that's a really good point to touch on, is that we're obviously talking that in the sports industry realm, but it's like a societal issue, right? So I think I completely agree. You can kind of just ask anyone that's close to you. It doesn't need to be someone working in sport. So Ian, do you have anything to add to that?
You know, I think throughout this entire conversation, we've been saying communication is, you know, quite an important factor. And actually, you know, open those doors, have those conversations. You know, we are going to be more than open to being asked, you know, how do you feel about this? What happens when? We can go back to that quote about men applying for jobs when they're only 60% qualified, and women will only do it if they're 100% qualified. So already you can see the differences in how males and females work. So we are more likely to sit back, just in the nature of sort of how we've been brought up and how society is, right? Men have always been louder. They always sort of voice their opinions, you know, heavier than what females and women will normally do. Being mindful, like understanding that, you know, just because you're bigger and you have a louder voice doesn't always mean that, you know, what we say isn't of value. So taking a step back and just sort of like assessing that room, assessing, you know, the situation, not going bull in a china shop, basically. So just taking a breath, asking those questions. Like Jatila was saying, you know, we all have females that we can ask, closest friends, family, even your mum. You know, just how would you react to this sort of thing? And I think if we start that mindset, and if everybody starts to just be a little bit more open, you know, you can really see the change in the way that people work. And I think like Sportsbro have a great atmosphere in the office at the moment. Part of it is obviously we also have the New Era program. So that's very big on everyone's minds. But you can see the change from when, you know, I first started and it was one of two females, to the way that everybody reacts now and is very appreciative and very open. And nobody talks at you. It's very much an open conversation. So even that, like just seeing it in your own company, it's really great to see. So definitely communication.
For sure. And not to speak on all our behalfs, but I think if anyone doesn't have someone to talk to, you can definitely reach out to me. I don't know about the both of you.
Absolutely.
I'm very happy to answer any questions. But no, that's perfect. Thank you both so much. So we're going to shift gears very quickly. And I'm very excited to introduce the next segment of our podcast, where Eleanor will be speaking with the founder of the Fair Play Project, Santo Ruggieri, about the nonprofit's research into gender inequality in sports.
Sorry to interrupt your podcast, but if you haven't heard, we are heading to Manhattan for SportsPro New York. On the 18th and 19th of March, you can hear from industry innovators such as LPGA Tour Commissioner Molly Marcoux-Saman, David Gandler, the CEO of FuboTV, and Big 12 Commissioner Brett Yormark. Come to be inspired and learn how to successfully navigate the major opportunities in modern sports media. Book your place today at newyork.sportspro.com, and listeners to this podcast can get 20% off by using code PODCAST at checkout. Terms and conditions apply, and this offer is not applicable to pre-existing purchases.
Santo Ruggieri, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on this New Era podcast. Great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So we're super excited to be sort of discussing your career and your personal aspirations in the field of sport, and most importantly, advocating for women in sport. As you'll know, this is something we are very passionate about here at SportsPro with our New Era program. Just to give our listeners some context, it's a year-round program designed to recognize, support, and advocate for a new era of gender equality within the international sports industry. So it's definitely something you're familiar with what you're working on. You know, a lot of times women are trying to break through, trying to find their footstep and a space within a male-dominated industry. So yeah, I'd love to sort of dive right in and hear about what the Fair Play Project does and how all this came about.
So Fair Play was born out of another project called Dream Soccer that started 2 years ago. 2 years ago, I was in my freshman year at high school. The summer of my freshman year, I attended a camp in the south of Florida called IMG Academy. And IMG is sort of designed to maximize your ability as an athlete of any different type of sport. IMG is a very, very expensive camp, but it's a very, very, very transformative experience to attend a camp like IMG or any other camp that is similar to that, in the sense that it takes your game from whatever level you come in at, and it really maximizes the potential that you have as an athlete to go to the college level, to go to the academy level, to go pro, et cetera. And so I started thinking about financial inequities that exist in sports, because obviously IMG is an incredibly expensive place to attend. Not everyone has equal access, equal opportunity to attend camps like IMG. And so Dream Soccer, the former name of Fair Play, was born to address financial inequities that exist in sports and maximize young kids' potential to attend camps like IMG, sponsor them, and have them achieve their goals of becoming pro or college athletes. Different things happened over the course of the last year where I started paying attention to events that were happening, major events like the US Open, 50 years of equal pay for women, and the Women's World Cup, and how it infamously ended, obviously. But I started thinking about gender inequities in sports as an issue that I was hearing a lot in my head and a lot more. And obviously, it matters a lot to us here in the United States relative to the US women's national team and the fact that they just got equal pay relative to men, even though the output that the women have is significantly more, given that they're multi-World Cup champions and the men have never really gone past the round of 16. We think about this issue a lot here. It mattered to me so much that I actually changed Dream Soccer and we turned that into Fair Play. And now Fair Play has become designed to expose inequity and increase opportunity for women's sports at every level.
Amazing. That's super interesting and super empowering. Taking a step back from where you first started, I think obviously you were quite young when you were exposed to that. And I think a lot of times as young people, we try to go into sports and all of us have this dream. I also used to play soccer. We have this dream of reaching to the top and, you know, trying every possible way to get there. And as you said, luckily we have the backing of our parents or if other people have savings, you know, to do so. How did you kind of realize that there was that issue? Because I can imagine when you attended that academy, your goal was not to see if there was an inequity there. It was to try and improve your skills and your progression in that field. So what was the point where you realized there's something wrong here?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I think it goes back to my education and the way that I think as a person. So I attend a high school in New York City called the Ethical Culture Fieldson School. And so what they do in terms of their education is they really challenge you in any field, whether it's math, whether it's science, whether it's history, English, to take an ethical lens and approach what you're doing in life from an ethical perspective. And certainly we talk about inequities, we talk about privilege, a lot of fields. And so something that's really important to me as someone who holds a lot of privilege, both educationally, racially, from a gender perspective, is to think a lot about the privileges that I have as a man, certainly in terms of gender equity. And so I live my life asking a lot of questions, places that I go. I personally experienced a great transformation of my game. I'm a varsity athlete at my school here in New York City. My freshman year, I did not play, but my sophomore year, I increased dramatically because of my experience at IMG. I spent 3 weeks there and my game went from relatively good player to a dependable starter for my team. And I thought a lot about, well, those experiences are so transformative, but they shouldn't just be exclusive to me or to people like me. And that's the very small majority of the population. And we really want to have everyone have the same opportunity in that sense.
And I think it would be great to kind of touch upon, you know, where we go from that point of recognizing it an issue to then how we implement an effective solution to it. Because I would say from my experience, you know, women in sport are often applauded or looked as champions and trying to pave this way through a male-dominated space. How do we recognize that this is an issue? It's not just about celebrating these women who have broken through and it just shouldn't be about that. How do we then go on to implement an effective solution? And I think this is what Fair Play Project is trying to do as well.
So there's a couple of things. First, exposing the inequity is a big part of what Fair Play does. And it's a big part of the people who deny sort of the inequity that exists currently and the people who push it down and don't show it to the full extent that it actually is and the role that it plays. So we want to work a lot to really expose the level of inequity that exists in current sports for women. And then moving forward with empathy, with compassion from male allyship, you can sort of have actionable steps, because obviously this is a global problem. It's not going to get solved extremely fast, but you can have actionable steps, goals. You can make a plan. You can outline different ways to attack this problem. For instance, you can view this from the lens of, well, we need to change people's perspectives on women, people who have a negative perspective on women's sports, people who don't watch women's sports on television. You might say that they don't watch women's sports because they have a sexist belief that women are, you know, less enjoyable to watch on television. Or you might approach this from the perspective of, we need to convince the media and advertisers like Nike and Adidas to offer more sponsorships to female athletes, because that's going to increase their television airtime. And then via increasing their television airtime, people are naturally going to pay more attention to women on television. And that's going to change the culture globally that surrounds women's sports. So we're actually taking that latter approach right now, because it feels more actionable in terms of we have actual targets, as opposed to trying to infiltrate people's minds. That can be a little more challenging, in my opinion. But there are certainly both angles of approach there. And we see lots of progress, certainly with global superstars coming up in women's sports. There's a lot of places to invest, and there's a lot of money in that field that is currently not being exploited due to the fact that, you know, we're really only contributing 50% of our population to sports here with just men.
And I think it's interesting how you say, like, a lot of the times we think that change can only happen at the top level, and it's not really that case. It's not just about, you know, sponsorship. It's not just about only the, you know, big stars voicing their opinion. There's a lot of work that happens lower down, and that can be simple things as mindset change, like that you just mentioned previously. But I think it would be interesting to discuss the verticals that the Fair Play Project works upon. I mean, you do work in terms of advocacy, there's research that goes on, there's programs that you deliver. So I think it would be nice for our listeners to get some insight on those different verticals that you work on.
Absolutely. So one of the wonderful things that we recently did was our research, which was conducted by Veritas Insights. And so that gives us a great idea of essentially why are people not watching women's sports in the United States particularly. And so what we found was that most people don't watch women's sports due to the fact that it's not on television enough. So for instance, you turn on your TV right now, you scroll through your channel list, you look at all of the sports games that are on in any different type of sport, and you're going to find that there are significantly more male sports on television than there are women's sports, and this is here in the United States. And so most people who responded to our survey responded that they don't watch women's sports because of that issue, because it's not on television as much. And so that is great for us to know, because it allows us to then build a solution or a plan of attack, essentially, of how we can combat this issue. And that is, well, how do we get women on television more? And then that plays into, okay, now we have to advocate. We need to advocate in terms of the media, and who does the media respond to? They respond to the advertisers. So how do we advocate that advertisers spend more on female athletes? Well, we need to build a business plan that shows that female athletes are incredibly lucrative, and there is a lot of money in that field that is currently not being used properly. And there are rising superstars, like we said, that are going to influence the field of different various women's female sports like basketball, like soccer, like volleyball, etc. The research really informs the work that we do and the advocacy that we do. And then we also, on our website, if you want to check out, there are tons of different articles that have some great statistics and some great facts about women's sports, the inequities that exist, and the work that other people are doing. It's also very inspiring.
So you just mentioned these stakeholders who obviously have a lot of power. What is their responsibility? How can they make impactful decisions to create change?
So they have a huge responsibility, especially in terms of the advertisers and the media and also researchers, in the sense that they really control what gets put on television. And via our research, we know that that's a really important part of changing the culture, because here at Fair Play, we believe that there's a culture globally around watching men's sports. And so our global goal is to create a culture that is equal to that around watching women's sports. And I think that in order to really convince those people in power, we need to sort of reshape and reframe the way that we're thinking about the problem here. Because a lot of the times here, we hear this notion that men are paid more because they bring in more money. And so we put them on TV more. But the reality is, you have to look at that the other way around. We put men on TV more, and then because of that, they make more money. We're not looking at this from the right perspective that, first of all, female sports are not getting put on television enough, and that's why they're not contributing to as much of the global sports culture that we want them to and that they should be contributing to. And then second of all, that's going to be a great gateway for equal pay and for more people to start watching female sports on television. The people who answered our survey, the people who don't watch female sports because it's not on television as often as men's sports are. And so by sort of convincing those big time players in the field who really contribute a lot in terms of their opinions, their decisions, if an advertiser goes out and contributes a major deal to a rising female athlete, and then that changes what gets put on ESPN, what gets put on SportsCenter in the mornings here in the United States, that's going to contribute a lot just in the next 5 years to the way men, women all across the country are going to think about female sports. And I don't think advertisers maybe think enough about the ethical actions of their decisions and how that impacts the next generation, the current generation, and beyond.
That's definitely really interesting and a very good point you made, because, you know, it can be a vicious cycle that people are trying to, you know, get out of, because it is an industry that is lucrative because of the money it makes. But if you look at it from a different perspective, you know, things could change quite rapidly. And there is a lot of talk around investment in women's sport. That is the next big thing. And people are kind of late already if they haven't already invested in women's sport right now. But again, I think, you know, these are people at the top of the game that can make really strong and impactful decisions. But I'd like us kind of to go into the societal level. I think that is a very strong point as well in terms of allyship. You referenced the World Cup earlier. I think that was quite an impactful tournament for women's sport. There were a lot of issues that were highlighted there in terms of inequity. You know, one of the most profound moments for me was Mary Earps, the Lioness goalkeeper, fighting with Nike to try and get her goalkeeper jersey, which in the end, you know, came through. Issues around, you know, Jenny Hermoso, disputes over bonuses, like a lot of inequity that realistically was only showcased from the players or from people advocating or tweeting about it, posting about it and sharing. How do you think society can sort of better recognize and amplify these issues, as well as any achievements, because both are equally as important? What's your take on that?
So first of all, something that I want to mention relative to that World Cup is the lack of accountability on the part of the actions of the people who committed those mistakes and the lack of pushback across the world. We really want to amplify those stories as much as we can. And we mean that in terms of that's how you actually build empathy and compassion from a male allyship perspective, is you need to tell stories, you need to listen, but you need to listen actively, not passively. Because the more you take in information as a member of society, if you're a male identifying person watching this or listening to this podcast, you're taking in this information, and if you're saying to yourself, wow, yeah, there are really a lot of inequities relative to gender in sports, but you don't actually think about how you're going to put that information to work, that's not doing much other than sitting in your brain. But if you listen actively and you think about, well, how am I going to take that information and now use that? How can I, just as an individual, contribute to the new culture around watching women's sports? Well, you can turn on your television right now and check out how many men's sports there are on television and how many women's sports there are on television. And I guarantee you, you'll see for yourself that there are probably 3 times the amount of male sports currently on TV right now than there are women's sports here in the United States on just the major channels. And turn on a women's sport, watch it at night with your family, have it on in the background during dinner, right? That's just one way that you can change your family's culture. If you watch sports at dinner, chances are you probably watch man sports. These are the kinds of ways that you can change your perspective. For those that push back against that, you know, if you're listening to this and you just say like, I want to watch whatever I want to watch, like that's my right to watch whatever I want to do. It's my television. It's my family. Right. I hear that also, but I would challenge you to maybe open the perspective and think of empathy from a perspective of what would this like to be a female, right? What if you have a daughter who wants to play sports? What's it like from her perspective? What's it like from your wife's perspective? What's it like from the perspective of a rising female athlete who might feel discouraged because you don't care enough to turn them on and watch them on television? What does that mean for them growing up, thinking about becoming a superstar athlete and maybe thinking of, well, I'm not going to get paid as much as a man? And that's incredibly discouraging, and that's incredibly unfair, and that's very, very ignorant. And so I think that if you're pushing back against that, try and think of it from the perspective of putting yourself in the shoes of a female athlete and what that means to not have equal opportunity. Yeah.
Oftentimes, I think the issue stems from men not actually knowing or appreciating the challenges that women may face, either a woman competing in sport or women working in the sport industry. So I think it's interesting to touch upon how men can actually be allies. I think from my perspective, a huge thing is when men talk and amplify achievements that women have accomplished, or even the struggles they face and how they have potentially supported them. Obviously, you are a man in this setting. You know, what would you recommend to other men who do understand these issues that you just mentioned about empathy and support and, you know, a little girl dreaming about being an athlete, but what can they actually do to support this?
So one of the biggest things for me as a male ally is being really intentional about how I use my voice and what I use my voice for. So obviously this is a story about women's equity, right? So you don't want the voice at the forefront of that story to be a man's voice. You want that to be a woman's voice. And so a lot of the work that I do is listening and amplifying their stories and being there for the support and offering the resources that I have to do that. So you really want to be intentional about listening actively and then also paying attention to how you're sort of supporting the stories that they're putting out. Like you said, reposting any successes, reposting any inequities that they're noticing, making sure that you not only take acknowledgement of those, but you push that message to other people, because that's how this sort of spreads and this becomes a societal problem. Some of the greatest movements, I mean, in the history of the United States and in the history of the world have been supported by allies. And so the power of allyship is really important in terms of how we can make a big change. And I think that men are capable of, you know, supporting women and the movement for gender equity in sports in a great way that's not only ethical and allows, you know, female voices to be at the forefront of the movement, but also to have a great impact. You want to be intentional about how you use your voice in the sense that you're not speaking too much, but that you're also not taking too far of a step back. And I think that's also another mistake, and that's another pitfall that you might find yourself in, you know, silencing your voice completely. And that's not really helpful either, because at that point you're just kind of complicit and you're not really offering anything more to help the situation. So that's really my advice.
The only thing I'd add to that from my side is, you know, you mentioned active listening. I think it is important that, you know, men also are there to ask the questions and be open and, you know, candid about it. You know, we don't expect you guys to know everything. It is, as I said, something that has been normalized for so long, and over the generations, what people experience will be different. So I think it is, you know, of course, the responsibility of women as well to speak up and, you know, use their voice for what needs changing from their perspective. But I think men should also feel comfortable, as long as they're respectful in the way they're asking the questions, to do that. And then that's where, you know, the active listening can also come. In terms of the next stages, like where you see the Fair Play Project going, obviously you've done a lot of great work. What is the next thing that you're working on and where you see all this going?
So Fair Play is looking forward to the Paris Olympics in 2024. We're certainly going to keep doing some research throughout the spring, but our main project for the rest of this year is going to be the documentary that we're working on that's going to come out around the time of the Olympics. It's going to be surrounding basically the topic of gender equity in this year's Olympics. We're going to approach it from multiple different angles, from the perspective of current athletes, former athletes, rising athletes, coaches, women in management. We really want to look at the different angles of this issue. And obviously there's been the rhetoric around, you know, gender equality and gender parity of this year's Olympics, but there is obviously still not that level playing field. And so we still want to talk about the issues that are affecting this year's Olympics and women in general in terms of sports, highlight those in our documentary, but also highlight the successes that women have had in the past couple of decades, currently champions. And so multiple different stories, certainly different emotions, but we're looking forward to getting to speak with those athletes, hear their stories and share them with you all.
Amazing. That sounds super exciting. We'd definitely be keen to get that data and of course watch the documentary. So please feel free to share it with us. But yeah, thank you so much for sharing all the insight. I'm sure people will love to sort of go in and see the resources you also have. I would prompt people to do so, both on our new website and on yours. But yeah, if you have any final recommendations for our listeners, any three tips you have to being the great male ally they can be, just to wrap up.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you said, you know, check out our website, check out our Instagram at fairplayproject.org, and you can check out the research we've done. You can check out other articles. Stay tuned for that documentary. As for the three things that you can do as a male ally, I would say, one, we've talked about this before, but listen actively. The second one is going to be amplify stories. And the third is going to be take action. And take action sounds broad, but what I really mean by that is, you know, turn your television on, take a look at female athletes, repost them on your story, support the female athletes at your school, support your daughter, support your wife who might be a female athlete. Support women in general, in management, in any different type of field, because obviously we know that gender inequity is systematized in our society in a way that it is affecting more than just sports. And I think that you can have a powerful impact in many different ways.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sam. So I hope everyone takes these great pieces of advice away and they turn them into actions. And hopefully we'll be discussing this maybe in a year from now and things will have changed. But thank you so much and good luck with the rest of your projects.
Thank you.
So that's it for today's episode, but we'll be back for more New Era specials throughout the year. Thanks to Tila, thanks Yin, and thanks everyone for tuning in. We will see you next time.